Welcome to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast for Sunday, October 11th, 2015. The Reverend Ron McHatty is preaching. The sermon for today is Building a Lasting Legacy, One of Faith. The Old Testament reading is from Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 9, and the Gospel reading is Matthew 7, verses 24 through 27.
So I've entitled this series for us during the month of October, Building a Lasting Legacy. And I think one of the things that we oftentimes forget is that each one of us is building legacies. Some people do so very intentionally, and they're very mindful that they are building a legacy. Other people are not so intentional, and they're not very deliberate, and they don't realize the legacy that they're building until sometimes quite late in life. But whether we realize it or we don't realize it, each one of us is building a legacy. It may be hard for you to conceive. A number of years ago, I haven't seen a study about it recently, but a number of years ago, they did a study on how the number of people in the course of the average everyday person, how many lives they significantly impact. And the number they came up with was 250 people. That the average person leaves a significant impact or impression on 250 people, minimal, in their life. So that catches a lot of people by surprise. Most of us don't perceive that we have that strong of a lasting impact on people's lives, or that many people. If we're in positions that cause us to interact with more people, in leadership positions, the more visual we are, or visible we are, the greater the amount of impact that we're leaving in the lives of people. But it's there. So, you know, when somebody says, or you start saying, yeah, well, who am I? You know, bottom line is, you may be a pretty important person in more lives than what you have ever perceived in your lifetime. So I think it's important for us to think about legacies. And we don't talk about legacies very often. So Webster's definition is a real source of disappointment to me, unless it's been changed. Because I was, you know, I was trained that when you go to the dictionary and you start reading through the definitions, that they're in order of preference or importance. So the very first item that Webster refers to is monetary and wealth and what you pass on to your siblings. Well, not your siblings, but to your children and to your children's children. And then the second one is, it's just kind of, at least the edition I was reading, it's just kind of milquetoast. Number two is anything handed down as from an ancestor. And I go, jeez. You know, while I think of the word legacy, I think of a heck of a lot more than what Webster's talking about. And then you keep on reading in Webster and it starts getting to what I consider possibly to be of greater importance. And I just go, you know, we're just not on the same page. Now, I realize that Webster is not always correct. Okay, or at least in some people's mind, we have a classic family. Well, you know, kind of our inside joke in a sense. I got to jot myself a note on this because this is great. I don't know if we were just married or we are still dating, but James' dad could be very bullheaded, and he was. He was a wonderful man, but you know, he was also I still remember a person that, well, I won't say that, it might offend some of you here. Well, I'll go ahead and say it anyway, whether it offends or not. had an insurance agent, life insurance agent, one day Richmond call me and say, I want you to know that this is a monumentous day for me in my business. And I went, wow, what happened today? He said, I finally passed my income goal that I no longer have to take any doctors, lawyers, or engineers as clients. And I just went, what are you talking about? And he said, the reason why is because those three professions all think they know more about your business than you do. And I never have to put up with that again if I don't want to. I went, well, okay. Each to their own. So, Jameis' dad was a doctor. And sometimes it was real hard to get into a many conversations became arguments if you pushed them, because he was going to be right. And on this one occasion, we were at the dinner table, and Jama challenged her dad on a comment on a use of a word. And they started to kind of butt heads like that. And Jama just politely excuses herself. And in about 2 minutes, she comes back with Webster, open to the page, reads the definition to my father-in-law as to what this word means, to which he said, well, that's Webster's opinion, but mine's correct. End of conversation. So I'm kind of bordering that this morning when I say, you know, I'm real disappointed on Webster's definition, because to me it just seems like there's so much more. I jotted down a quote in here from Billy Sunday, who was an evangelist ages ago, but I thought this was really a great quote that he put down. The fellow that has no money is poor. The fellow that has nothing but money is poorer still. And I just feel like, man, there's so much truth in that, because there's so much more to life than just money. And I know that seems strange to be talking about during what is traditionally in life the church stewardship time, but there is so much more to life and to ministry than just money. So the Old Testament book of Proverbs is a fascinating book. The first 9 chapters of Proverbs focuses upon the importance of gaining wisdom in our lives. And it roots that wisdom within a genuine reverence for the truths of God. But it doesn't eliminate wisdom just to that. And then from chapter 10 on to the end of Proverbs, Solomon shares all these bits of wisdom that are either unique to himself or he has picked up. And, you know, if you read through Proverbs, it's just, I mean, many people never get through Proverbs, because by the time the first 3 chapters are very easy to read, and then chapters 4 through 9, a lot of people have a real hard time connecting with those chapters, and it's like there's a personification of wisdom in there, and they just don't know what to do with it, so they never make it to chapter 10. And then after chapter 10, it's like going into a curio shop and reading all the plaques on the wall, in a sense. It's just fascinating to get all these little bits of wisdom as you go through the book of Proverbs. And as I've been going through the book of Proverbs, I think it builds on 3 different legacies that we're building. There's passages, and then I feel like you can reinforce that as you go through the rest of Scripture as well. One of them that Proverbs talks about is the one that Webster talks about, monetary. And one of the key verses is Proverbs 13:22. I put it down for you, and I tried to look for versions, translations that were a little bit easier to read. I chose today's English version. It says, good people will have wealth to leave to their grandchildren. And the emphasis is that, you know, it's going beyond generations. And I don't know, maybe some of you have thought about that, but, you know, you begin thinking, what am I going to be able to leave to the next generation? And we all kind of have that desire to want to leave something that's going to better their lives as they go on. The second one is character. And, you know, I think that that's where my mind goes almost immediately when you start talking about a legacy. You know, and that's the reason why I was so disappointed in Webster, is that a person's character is just, it's just critical, at least from my perspective. And I keep wrestling with that as I grow older, and I think I'm even more mindful of that with my grandchildren than with my kids, and maybe some of you can identify with that. I think oftentimes with my kids, I was kind of caught up at times, like Jamin's dad, being right, and with my grandchildren, I think I'm much more aware of them on how they perceive me, just not in terms of whether or not I'm right or wrong, but just what kind of a quality of person I am. And in Proverbs 22, I took this one out of contemporary English version that says, a good reputation and respect are worth much more than silver and gold. A good reputation and respect are worth much more than silver and gold. Has to be earned, but, you know, our character is critical in terms of who we are as people. Won't go into it in great detail, and I don't know if I'll go into it next week because we'll talk more about character next week. But some of the passages in the Old Testament that for years just really got beat up by scholars, both in the religious world and also in the secular world, are the passages of Scripture that talks about the sins of the fathers being passed on to their children and to their children's children and to their children and children's generation. And all of that was just kind of, it really kind of was a source of angst with a lot of people in scholarship until about the last 30 years. And in the last 30 years, scholars beginning in both the religious, more in the secular world, coming to terms with how many of aspects of our lives literally are seen and reproduced in the generations to come. One of them is in the area of child abuse. It's, you know, it can become a family trait until someone along the line makes it a deliberate mission to break the cycle in a family. But there's a realness there. You know, our worst traits and habits do get passed on from generation to generation. I think that one of the things that maybe some of us as we get older as parents that bugs us is when you begin seeing in your adult children your worst qualities come out sometimes, you know, and you go, oh my gosh, I had no idea that they were picking that up along the way. I wasn't even aware that I was doing that. The flip side of it is also, they also are capable of picking up our best qualities. So this whole idea of passing on the sins from one generation to the next, we can also pass on what we could call the blessings from one generation to the next, the very best qualities. So there's a real need for us to really call into check and work on who are we as a person, who are we presenting ourselves to be. Those around us, especially in our homes, are picking up on a lot more than what we ever foresee. And I think that, you know, some people have said that the joy of grandchildren is that God gives us a second chance. We begin, I think, as grandparents, beginning to weigh differently what's really important in life and what's not. The third legacy, I think, that we don't talk very much about, and I want to focus our attention on for a little bit this morning, is spiritual, or the legacy of faith. And I took this one out of Proverbs 1:7, and I used the Living Bible on it. It says, how does a man become wise? The first step is to trust and reverence the Lord. And the question I have to myself is, and to you is, to what extent are my children and my grandchildren and then those around me are able to see in a demonstrative sense the faith that I believe in? And is it more than just words? Is it also practiced? I mean, it's got to be a combination, and that goes partially with character. We'll talk about that. Words are meaningless unless people can see it. Practice, put into practice within our lives. And I know that this gets real tough oftentimes because many of us, to the best of our extent, feel like, you know, I have lived out as consistently as I understood it at the moment, the faith that is mine, and I have possibly on occasion, maybe sometimes more than on occasion, spoke of my faith, finding that balance so that ears and hearts are receptive rather than closed. I mean, that's a challenge for each and every one of us. But, you know, it is disappointing when we don't see that transferring over into the lives of our children. I think it causes us to realize all the influences in our society that are pulling them away from the faith and away from God. And it's just not our problem. It's the problem of a lot of faith traditions. One of the primary reasons that many faith traditions are resistant towards, quote-unquote, the American ethos is because what they see in America is that our children don't walk in the faith. And that's a real issue in many of the Middle Eastern countries. They don't want to become westernized, not just for religious reasons, or for political reasons, but religious reasons as well. They are afraid that a secular country will pull their kids out of the faith. That's a real tension in the country of Turkey, if you've ever been to Turkey. Because Turkey is a secular country, and its constitution is secular. And yet there's a real concern within the populace of Turkey and the tension that's there with the Muslim world and a secular country. But there's also a strong Christian influence in Turkey. And so it's a very interesting country as you watch them try to walk through all of this. But at the same time, I think that we need to be mindful of the fact that's a real dimension of who we are and what we're passing on. Proverbs says, you know, that our children in their adult years return to the faith if we've been faithful in embedding it into the lives of our kids. And I know I can't tell you how many people I have shared with and interacted with over the years that's the passage that they hold on to. And then every once in a while a phone call will come out of the blue and, you know, their kids are finally, as adults, re-engaging in the faith. And they're beginning to see that passage come true. And it's becoming a reality within their life once again, and the source of rejoicing in that. But are we consistent in going through that? I guess the thing where I really begin wrestling with this is that over the years, in doing memorial services, when you sit down and you begin to interact with a family, the thing that has flabbergasted me over the years is that more times than not, everyone in the room can talk about everything about that person except they're totally clueless about their faith and their faith beliefs. And more, if there's anything that gets dumped in my lap, it's that. And that's just not with a situation in which, for lack of better terminology, it would appear that deceased is a non-believer. It's even within what oftentimes I have considered and looked upon as being a really strong Christian family. The inability for their children to speak to their parents' faith and what that means. There's a huge difference when you're working with a family where faith is evident and known and where faith isn't evident and known. In some ways, I wish I had kept a tally. It sounds kind of grotesque in a sense, a tally of how many times I have been asked in that context, they are okay, right? I mean, they are okay. I mean, they are with God, right? I mean, tell me that. How many times I've had someone say, well, you know, before they came west, when they were back in Tennessee, our great-great-great-grandfather, well, he was a deacon in the local church. And just watching a family entity begin grasping for hope, something inside of them is saying, there's more to life than just this. That's one of the things that's real interesting to me, is that even oftentimes with people who have been very anti-faith, very close to being an atheist, an agnostic for sure, grasping for hope in that moment, and how far back they'll reach to try to find the hope. And I go, darn it. I mean, it just shouldn't be there. You know, in 1 Thessalonians, Paul talks about that we don't grieve like others who have no hope. And so, not trying to lay a trip on any of you. I mean, in our family, my daughter is more solid than a rock. I wouldn't be surprised at all someday if she corrected me on my own faith beliefs.
I really wanted to fire one of our youth directors. But how do you fire someone on your staff when they do a great job with everyone but your own kid? But her expectations were that my son would not be normal because he was the pastor's son. And we went head to head on that. And I encouraged Matt to go to another church. I encouraged Matt to go to Young Life. Nope, this is my home church, you know. And I go, well, great, you know, every Sunday by the time we get there, we're all mad. You know, it's such a joyful experience. Because he was anticipating, you know, what was going to go wrong, what expectation was going to be placed upon him when we got there. So there aren't very many preachers who encourage their kids not to come to church, but I was one of them, you know, and desperately trying to find another religious connection for him. So he's been working through all of that. But even now I begin to see glimmers every once in a while. You know, he'll make a statement like, well, I believe, just not quite exactly like you. Oh, well, that's not unusual. You know, in people's faith journeys. Or a statement, he says, you know, if I do ever find the right gal and if I do ever get married, he's 34, she's going to have to be willing to go to church. Well, we're not quite into a faith conversation, but we're getting there. And I just stopped and I said to Matt, this was about 3 years ago, I said, you know what that means, don't you? And he said, oh yeah, it means that you don't bring them and drop them off. It means you come, you're involved in their life, and you're involved in the life of the community of faith where you're taking them. And you know, sometimes God is just really merciful, because his little voice said to me, shut up, don't say a word. You know, just relish the moment. So it's there, it's connecting, however he's working it through. But you know, when I look at my own kids, I do ask myself, you know, I think I was the same person with each of them, but that's part of my legacy. Just not as a pastor, but hopefully as a believer. And I'll get into that a little bit next week, my character, with my dad. But am I living out what I'm preaching, literally, for me, in a way that my kids can connect with it, that I am passing on a legacy? How does that look with our grandkids? And passing that on. So that's something I want you to be mindful of as we talk about legacies, because I think that we each do have a spiritual legacy, that we each have a faith legacy. Whether your kids are actively practicing the faith at the moment in time, when you're the deceased, you know, my great prayer for you is that your family is able to speak to your beliefs. What I can say to it is, it's an amazing gift to give to a family when they're grieving. To see a family without hope is one thing, and to see a family that has hope, even though it's still at that point mom's faith or dad's faith, it's a whole different picture. It's a whole different environment. I love the statement by Dwight L. Moody, and you know, obviously it's dated by the seasons of history. A man ought to live so that everyone knows he is a Christian, and most of all, his family ought to know. And you know, that's just, you know, that's just really an impact. So I jotted down some questions or thoughts if you haven't ever really considered your own faith legacy of you know, you might begin asking yourselves these questions. To what extent do I publicly acknowledge God? I mean, I'm not talking about becoming a flaming evangelist, but is God talk just part of your conversation? Do you talk about faith with families and others? Is your faith modeled in your family? Do you invite others to participate in your faith with you? And it's not necessarily going to church, but you know, just simple things. And on none of this do I see trumpets blowing or fanfares blowing, but just in our own way, is there a belief presence as we interact with our families and as we go forth? A strange verse that I put down at the very beginning of this, coming from Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is one of my favorite books in the Bible. Most people can't stand it. But, you know, Solomon is a guy who has everything. And you go through his life experience of trying everything out. And he can try everything out in excess. It's just available to him. And at the very close, he makes a statement. It's hard to find a translation that sometimes doesn't grate on people. Because it sounds so legalistic. But I think it speaks to a dimension in his heart that just doesn't come through in the language. But in today's English version, in verse 13 of chapter 12, he says, "After all this, there is only one thing to say. Have reverence for God and obey His commands, because this is all that we were created for." Scholars have difficulty with the translation, but they all seem to agree on the interpretation, and that is that what Solomon is saying is that at the very, as he's gone through all this excess in his life, and he's been able to follow all these other paths, there's only one path that brings the sense of fulfillment and purpose and peace to his life, and that is the path in God. And so Solomon says, you know, so heed his commandments. It's the best way to walk. So he's not trying to make it sound legalistic. He's just saying, I've been able to do it all, and this is what I have found to be most reliable. Heed this way of life. And that's what Deuteronomy 6 is all about. That was our Old Testament reading. You know, just have your faith be an ever-present part of your life. Matthew 7, Jesus looks at it from a different perspective. Practice it. Practice it. It brings stability to a person's life. Even in the worst days. So I want to close each one of these with songs that I think kind of speak to all of this. This morning I just want us to think quietly and reflect upon the words. And they're the same words over and over. But I think it talks about that faith journey and what the core of it is. And it's a song that many of us know well. It's Day by Day from Godspell. So just take a few moments. Reflect on the lyrics as they're played, and then. I've got it. Ready to go.
To me, are you not bound to show your fellow servant the same pity I showed you?
And so, frick him with a strict pocket that he quickened the snort to for plunk the schmacks. the schmatz.
What?
Been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street in Vallejo, California, or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.